when you take a look at what's going on globally and at home, we've got a lot of things happening all at once. What are some of the things you're looking at that maybe not is on the farmer's radar today?
Well, Don, thanks for the time. I think the farmers are well aware of all the same things that we're trying to find a path and navigate through as an ag industry. In top of mind is the persistence of the war in the Middle East, its impact on things that are directly or tangentially related to ag, directly being urea that can't find its way through the Strait of Hormuz at a dependable pace, and tangentially the amount of sulfur that ag is dependent on that needs to come through that same waterway and find its way into ag value chains and other industries. But that has been a disruption that is going to be with us for some time as we keep working through what it does to the other commodity prices.
You were at a time when growers would be typically trying to price some of that fertilizer for fall and lock in if they could find a price. It's been hard to get that job done with the uncertainty that's coming out of that Gulf region.
Yeah, I'll make this comment understanding there's two sides to this. We've seen the fertilizer, particularly nitrogen markets, work their way lower during the 60-day ceasefire. And at that point, we had done our UAN fill, and the industry was very active, and a lot of retailers were buying UAN, not as much urea or anhydrous, but UAN was placed at those lower values. And, now the market's moved higher because we're seeing activity again over there from both Iran and U.S. And so that's pushing the markets higher. And so, what opportunities will there be? We're still at much, much lower levels today than we had been, 60, 90 days ago. So is there opportunity? I wouldn't go that far. I think there's still enough time for both the grower and the retailer to wait to see how this is all going to play out. And if it's over again in 30 days, likely the market will find its way lower. But it's a lot to watch, and it's a lot to concern ourselves with because, it moves its way into the price of diesel fuel or even, a new set of tires. Anything that we're going to use that has any petroleum-related impacts is going to be, at very volatile values. We're seeing it in our lubricants business, which is something that we don't talk about often, but base oil that we use to create, engine oils under our Senex brand are also seeing dramatic price increases in volatility. And that business would maybe see price moves two times a year. We can see price moves two times a week now. And so very untraditional market movements across the board impacting, farmers and the ag value chain.
So how does that farmer and that ag value chain position themselves when things are changing that rapidly?
Well, I think, the best answer is everybody needs to be more transparent. To try and spend all day on the phone to seek out best prices, you might be better off because markets are moving so quickly. Grain markets, Don, this morning as we talked about the wheat market with a nice rally, and corn has seen, some volatility that you could price yourself into forward contracts that would be meaningful. We just need to stay closer to the trusted advisors, the people that are working with farmers every day that are in the markets, both on the outbound side selling grain or processors or the input suppliers, so that there's transparency, because as markets are going to continue to be volatile, we have to stay close to it and understand at what point are we trying to price our way into, a profitable situation and try to manage the acres the right way as best we can.
Take it for what it's worth, but there was a survey with some economists saying that basically we could be in this drag on the economy, farm economy, for an extended period of time, 3 to 5 years maybe. Do you see this as the new normal for these growers?
Yeah, the long history of agriculture has proven that there's troughs and then peaks. I think concerning is the peaks don't last as long as perhaps they had decades ago. The spikes happen because of turbulence and violence somewhere around the world. And that's different kinds of disruption than, say, the 1980s when Australia lost a wheat crop, or North Dakota, my home state, lost lost by and large a crop because of drought in the late 80s. Those were the kind of market moving events that were more typical that caused the peaks that we were able to price profit in more easily and more dependably. Now we have, you know, it seems as if we have different weather anomalies that impact us and more geopolitics, more war, more disruptions that are, frankly, harder to predict and harder to manage around. You know, just a few years ago, we watched the price spike because the war in Ukraine happened with Russia and disrupted the Black Sea, which is a major grain trading position that feeds a lot of the world and North Africa, certainly. That shifted trade flows for about 16 months. And then it became kind of ho-hum and it's ongoing and we don't even talk about it anymore. And supply chains are a bit resilient. And after time, they find a way to move material and price their way back into the market. And so it was a price spike that we got to enjoy. And then, you know, it finds its way to lower values again after everything's rationalized. But that's why it's harder to predict because it's not just weather, it's weather plus the balance of how the world is working today as we shift away from globalism or there's changes in ideas here in the EU and the major consumers of grain around the world are shifting. That's creating the chaos that's harder and harder for us to understand or predict or price our way into.
So in this environment of CHS or any of the companies of this sort, is that a time when you pull in your horns, or is it an economy like this really make you get creative?
Well, it's going to force let me answer the question that would be a bit differently. So the dramatic shifts in the rise of more and more production coming on in Brazil, the change in diet because of Make America Healthy, and we see that in consumption patterns, the smallest U.S. cattle herd since 1951, and the new renewable volume obligations that this administration just put forward are all fundamentally individually significant, but collectively have massive influences on how we think about ag and frankly, how we think about, you know, where our company needs to be to best serve the cooperative network and the American farmer. And it's shifting more toward things like turning grains into fuel at a pace at which we would have contemplated. And now we need to accelerate because that's what the new renewable volume obligation and the renewable identification number that's associated with every gallon of petroleum, diesel fuel and gasoline that's built in the country, the policy is pushing us toward reevaluating our footprint and our network and thinking differently about processing grains. And I think that'll be the big theme, you know, here in the U.S. for some time, is continue to challenge one side of the ledger, which is, you know, fossil fuels, and think about how we better involve American agriculture in the energy business. And that's where we think our company plays a vital role, is at the intersection of ag and energy to help figure that out, understanding, you know, some parts of both sides of that ledger. But that's the dynamic shift for American ag. This isn't doom and gloom. It's simply a period of transition.
We've got a lot of things sitting out there politically with a farm bill that an uncertain path forward right now with getting that done before the end of this marketing year. E15, a lot of the talk of some kind of assistance payments. How big a factor is that for the bottom line for our producers?
Well, all of that will have an impact. You know, E15 and 45Z legislation should have a positive impact for the corn farmers, particularly those farmers closer to the processor. You know, as for any additional, you know, subsidy payments going to farm, we'll just have to wait and see, you know, how the administration feels about that and if the funds are available. So I, you know, I'm not deep enough inside the Beltway to know how that's going to play out, but we do hear that they're talking about something, as you referenced. But I think, you know, as far as the farm bill goes, CHS has been in Washington saying, you know, you pass something you call a skinny farm bill. We still don't think that's enough because it obviously doesn't do the right market driving activities that we all would appreciate. Any farmer I talk to would say, you know, we're glad that people are in Washington are awake enough to prop us up with some kind of subsidy in the past, but they really want the market to work right. And fixed costs on farm and for every agribusiness continue to go up. So that's more and more demand on per acre production, but more and more demand on keeping costs in line, as well as having the market work in a productive way. And today, you know, you find a lot of break evens on farm per bushel of corn, you know, around $4 or a little higher. And that's going to test us as we continue to go forward. So everybody would prefer to have healthier markets, and that's, you know, rateable, sustainable demand, and that's why we think processing increases have to be a plausible part of that solution in the future.
Land value has been pretty resilient through this whole time period. We may be plateauing a bit on that front, but do you see consolidation becoming a bigger story as we move forward here, Gary?
Yeah, I think you know, from my chair, it's going to be inevitable that there will be more consolidation at every level, and given the margin structures, I think that's part of that calculus. You know, as for land values, it's something we don't track empirically but watch anecdotally. And you know, I think the day of the, you know, the non-invested the non-on-farm investor owning more and more farmland is a bit of a concern, because as we go on here, you know, somebody that's not aware of the tension that happens at the bottom of the market cycles, needing to get a return on their investment on that acre, that's gonna create problems as we continue forward. You know, for farmers to try and negotiate those cash rents and try and find a path, and we might have to see new creative models kind of come back in crop sharing or risk management, et cetera, because just to see it continue to go up at a normal CAGR like an investor might want, that doesn't necessarily play with the volatility that ag is trying to manage.